Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
There's chocolate-covered pretzels, chocolate-covered oyster crackers, which I was told are fabulous, ooh, so I'm keeping those. And the rest of the people here can have some of these things. The specialty is the chocolate-covered oyster cracker, and I've given you the milk and the dark. Be warned, once you open the box, it will go fast. Peanut brittle as well. Very nice.
Tony, as I said off the air, having read a history of Genghis Khan and how they brought tributes to him from all over the empire.
My old life.
You are now the great Khan.
Yes.
Everybody.
Khan. C-O-N.
Yeah.
Not K-H-A-N. Yeah.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Where we are live at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue, Jennifer Street Northwest, where we have a crab feast on the patio on Sunday, Father's Day. All you can
eat,
$49, three separate sittings. You have to call the restaurant and make a reservation. You have to call Chatter, 202-362-8040. 202-362-8040. $49, all the crabs you can eat. Going to be a little toasty out there.
It's filling up fast,
but
though.
But that's why we have beer, okay? Because if it's toasty,
beer
is what you want. Chris Saliza is here. Gary Braun is here. Nigel's going to run the board, do the news. Michael Kornheiser is here from Dr. Justin Manjusides. I hope I pronounced that correctly in Boston, and I did pronounce that correctly. I got this at a Red Sox-Cubs game in 2003. Since then, I've been telling my wife that I will send it to Mr. Tony this week. After 15 years of that... and bringing this monkey along for three moves, I'm finally sending it in because what's funnier than chimps in suits? But again, this chimp is 15 years old. This guy might be old enough to be in a monkey in a suit.
Older than Reggie.
I hold this up.
Oh.
This is fabulous.
It's a career builder bobblehead.
Career builder monkey. Very glad to have that.
Says hire a champ, not a chimp. And it's a bobblehead chimp in a suit.
In terms of sports, when you hear my words now, we are taping this at about 7:40 in the morning, but it doesn't drop till 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific. The U.S. Open is actually on now. We will have Sally Jenkins to talk about it. It's on now, ongoing.
Where do I stream that so I can not?
I'm on usopen.com.
Ongoing.
Thank you. That's what I'm going
to
do right now.
I am devoting much of the first segment today to the World Cup.
Yes.
The World Cup also starts today.
Tony, finally coming around.
This is great news, Tony.
I'm going to tell people that we will have at Chatter... not even against my will, because I think it's smart.
Oh, sure.
We're going to have the World Cup on.
Right.
Anything we can get our hands on, soccer-related, World Cup, we're going to have it on. You can come here and watch the game, and you don't have to worry that I'm going to come in here and yell at you. I'm not. I'm going to keep one TV on the Nats, and you guys, you can all, men, women, boys, girls, come in here and watch the World Cup. I'm not Mr. Soccer. I'm not, but I recognize this is a real big deal. I recognize it's a real big deal that we, the United States, along with Canada and Mexico, have been awarded the 2026 World Cup. First of all, it means that we're going to get in, which we're not in this year. We did a story at what?
I was just going to say, for people that want to get super excited about that, I think the main competition was Morocco.
Morocco.
A hot, dry country like Qatar,
good spices,
where nobody
though.
Even wants to have this thing now that they got it. Yeah. And that's why we won 2-1 in the vote.
Exactly.
Somebody abstained.
Kill them.
Throw them out. Okay. So I recognize this is a big deal. We talked yesterday on PTI. Is it momentous for U.S. soccer? And I pointed out we had the World Cup to ourselves in 1994, and we're not good enough to get in this year.
Yeah.
So it's probably not momentous. We have 60 of the 80 games in the United States of America. 60 of the 80 games. Canada gets only 10. Mexico, a legitimate soccer power, gets only 10. This is analogized, and I say this as somebody who fondly receives a paycheck from ESPN. We at ESPN, we get one playoff game in the NFL. We don't get the Super Bowl. We don't get conference championships. We are given the worst wild card game they can find. The at Jacksonville or at Kansas City, at Tennessee.
Right.
The game that nobody wants to even watch, let alone go to. That's what happened to Canada. That's what happened to Mexico. But I think, although I won't be alive in 2026, I think it's wonderful that the United States got this. I went to a bunch of games in 1994. It's great.
Why? Well, Mexico, if Mexico makes it, Mexico, I would presume, would get a game with Mexico in it.
Yeah, I would hope so. And Canada the same.
Yeah.
I would hope they'd get first-round games.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to say something?
No.
Okay.
Just wanted to interrupt you for nothing.
God. So It's lovely. It's great to watch. It's the finest quality soccer there is. And by then, maybe we'll be very good. I really don't know. I mean, maybe we're going to be very good. When you ask, why did we get it? We got it because we have football stadiums all over the country that seat 80,000 and up.
Clarification, American football.
American football. College football, pro football.
Infrastructure.
I said this yesterday. In Morocco, I'm sorry. There's no way Morocco has as many big stadiums as we've got. There's no way. There's no way any country in the world has as many big stadiums as we've got. If they wanted to do this, they could hold the World Cup only in SEC stadiums and sell more tickets than any other event in the history of mankind. Because you got five stadiums of more than 100,000 people.
Yep.
You can seat them.
And to be clear, Tone, people would, if the World Cup is here, people would fill 100,000 seat stadiums.
100%, because they did it last time. They did it. This is going to be the highest grossing revenue sporting event in the history of the world because of those stadiums.
Yep. Morocco, 10 stadiums of greater than 25,000 capacity, one of 50,000 or greater.
Right, so the final would have to have been there, and the rest would be all around the country.
The Big House, 100,000.
Yes.
Tennessee, 100,000. The Horseshoe, 100,000.
Texas A&M, 110,000.
100,000.
Right,
right.
You know, Morocco pounds sand, a very smart thing to say, because there's a tremendous amount of sand in Morocco. Okay.
Reiterate, now, we beat them. Take that, Morocco.
2-1. We're not a soccer country.
How's it taste, Morocco?
But this is not about Morocco and the United States. This is about money. Yeah. We pay the most for the television rights. We're getting this. And that's fine. This is not what I've come to talk about. And I want to thank the people who have come all the way from England and delivered to Michael as a present for Bootsy.
One of the greatest.
Manchester United small soccer kit with the name Bootsy on the back.
I mean, that is
awesome.
Bootsy 1, number 1.
Now, they are real soccer fans. They're football fans.
Yes. Right.
Okay? I grant that.
And my first question.
And they're about to storm out.
My first question was whether or not Bootsy would get beat up by soccer hooligans when he wears this. In London.
When he's in London.
Not as many soccer hooligans in England anymore, but you know where there are a lot of soccer hooligans? Russia. Yeah, that's
so
going to be a storyline.
Bootsy will not be suck in that jersey.
Did they bring me my Paul Pogba jersey? Or I don't see it.
Pol Pot jersey?
Paul Pogba.
Oh, I thought you said Pol
French
Pot,
midfielder.
The famous Cambodian dictator.
Tell him this World Cup story. It's going to be great. I'm so excited to hear your take on soccer.
You're going to be our soccer expert in the first 2 weeks of July. When we're not on. There is no snob on earth in sports like a soccer snob. There's nobody like that. There's no other sport that dwells on telling you how stupid you are because you don't appreciate the artistry of soccer. What a lame brain you are, what a lowlife you are, what a knuckle-dragging slob
Nimrod. You
are, because you can't appreciate the subtlety and texture of the beautiful game. There's no snob like that. I'm sorry, not in the world, not
so
in sports.
So is Tori Clark a soccer fan now?
Not even a caps.
And I introduce you to Sebastian Smee, who writes in the Washington Post. He's an art critic. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning art critic. I didn't win a Pulitzer Prize. He's better than I. I'm stating that right now.
Well, only at what you do.
Yeah, not criticism. Sure.
Let's read for a while. Soccer is the beautiful game. The beautiful game is also the world game, which means that around the globe, soccer provides hundreds of millions of children with many of their earliest experiences of beauty. With the World Cup about to open in Russia, it's worth acknowledging this. What is everyone so excited about? Another dumb game? Certainly. The possibility of national glory? Sure. Absurd theatrics, repulsive sums of money, a stupendous capacity for distraction, all that and more. But also, and I'm an art critic, so I defend my right to say this, a hankering after beauty, a profound and terrible yearning for an excruciating, off-the-couch-and-on-your-knees moment of sheer aesthetic bliss. Examples, try Cristiano Ronaldo's levitating bicycle kick for Real Madrid against, do I pronounce this right, Juventus.
Juventus,
or Zlatan Ibrahimovic's ridiculous first goal for the Los Angeles Galaxy. One that looped over the goalkeeper's head and swerved inside the net from just inside halfway. Better yet, Gareth Bale's stupendous bicycle kick goal for Real Madrid in the Champions League final. Anyone, even non-soccer fans, can admire the beauty of such moments. Each World Cup offers up more, and because the audience is so vast, these beautiful feats, F-E-A-T-S, imprint themselves on a global memory bank. You remember where you were when you saw them. I don't, actually. The most recent World Cup in 2014 boasted Robin Van Persie's flying header, James Rodriguez's volley off his chest, and Tim Cahill's gorgeous cross-goal volley. I happen to miss all of them, and I don't think my life is worse. I don't. Still, true soccer fans know these rare electrifying moments are but a small component of the game's overall aesthetic appeal. And with anything deeply and satisfyingly artistic, it can take years to appreciate these other parts. I don't have that time, I add parenthetically. Formations, tactics, match management, the choreographed ebb and flow of specific games, a particular style of certain teams, the temperaments of players. These are among the ingredients that make the beautiful game not just beautiful, but, italics added by the writer, artistic. Art is about specificity. There's no point about talking about it in the abstract. It's the same with soccer. You have to watch a specific game unfold to grasp its unique aesthetic. And just as with art, you need to know a little bit about how that particular game intersects with the sport's wider romance. I'm done reading
Jazz
this thing.
Jazz is about the notes you don't play.
I'm
Tony.
Done reading this thing.
Man,
and
he really nailed it, huh, Tom?
Dessen Howe, who was a film critic for the Washington Post at some point, who actually said to me once, every trip up the pitch is a novella. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. It's 10 or 11 guys running on grass with cleats trying to kick a ball. What is my? What do I hate about soccer? I hate one thing and only one thing about soccer, because they're great. I watch the World Cup. They have abilities to catch and pass. They're great athletes. Yeah. They're great athletes. They don't try to score. It's not American in that regard. We try to hammer the ball into the net. Take 30 shots if we can. All of our sports are about scoring. That's what we do. So I don't like soccer because they pass and they pass and they pass and they pass
they
and they don't
share.
Really
Doesn't
try
like how they
to
share.
Score.
He's an only
I'm not
child.
Saying it's not great. I'm saying it's not for me. And the snobbery of people that look at a 1-0, the insurmountable one-goal lead, the people that look at that and tell you how beautiful it is, they need to shut up. That's all.
Snow
they
shovel.
Need to shut up. Okay, I apologize for everything I've
Reminder,
just said.
The Saudi Arabia-Russia game will be shown here at Chatter for those of you that would like to come watch
when
the
When they
World
finally
Cup.
Do score, it's wonderful.
Yes.
It's great.
It is. Okay, no, you're thrilled at Iceland, you know, the celebrations for Iceland.
Yes.
Yes.
So I just think, am I wrong on the snobbery?
No, you're not.
No, so
you're not.
What I was going to take issue
come
with
on.
Is, I totally agree on the snobbery.
That's all.
It's brutal. And I think is a reason that, one reason
it tells
that
you
soccer
you're stupid.
Has not yeah. caught on as much, though it's catching on more, as much as it
yes.
should, because they try to make the bar for entry so high.
You're not
when you should
smart
make the bar
enough.
For entry low.
You're not smart enough to understand
right.
a game that ends 1-0.
Right.
Yes, I am.
1-0.
I went to high school. I'm smart enough for that. Yes, 1-0.
Like everyone says.
1-0. I'm smart enough to understand that.
Point two, have you ever seen the Simpsons parody of soccer?
No, I hope
it's
I
brilliant,
hope I would love
and
it
right in your wheelhouse. It's basically
shoot.
Eight passes to four, passes to eight, passes to four. They're just passing
shoot.
It back and back.
Just make the goalie
the
work.
The one thing that I would take issue with is I think you are thinking of there are definitely sides that play.
Sides are teams.
Correct. That do try to make.
Side orders.
That
kits
do try to
uniforms.
Make it beautiful. Brazil is one where there's where
love
it's it's clear
love
that
them.
There should be a shot
to shoot it.
And they pass. But there are a lot of teams that play much more directly.
Like
they try to score.
Like the U.S. team?
No. Well, I mean, we try to play more directly.
Good.
We're
well,
bad.
Of course not.
But
the
I don't
Cup.
Think every team plays like that. There are definitely teams. But if you watch Germany, for example, they're just They are matriculating the ball down the field.
And then, thank you, Coach Hank Stram. I just want, just try to win the game by scoring occasionally.
I think there is that.
But the snobbery of it.
The snobbery is worse.
There's no other sport on earth where they tell you you're too stupid to understand what you've just seen.
Yep. Right. Well, I think part of the problem here in the U.S. is that you don't have the best players in the world. Say, for instance, a guy like Pele or Georgie Best came over to play here in the United States.
They did.
Oh, they did, and it still didn't catch on.
No. Well, we have Christian Pulisic. Christian Pulisic. So keep your attacks to yourself.
They're great athletes. I've watched it. Yes. I appreciate it. I just don't like being told how stupid I am because I don't like it as much as Mr. Smee likes it.
Well, it's not that you don't like it, Tone. You just don't understand it.
If we watch a baseball game and he doesn't like, I don't think he's stupid.
Right, and you wouldn't talk down to him and be like, oh.
Well, I would.
Well, not for that.
Let's not rule anything out.
And again, he's better than I. Yes. You want to pull a surprise.
Only professionally.
I competed.
You're great at losing money in a restaurant.
He's in my category, a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Do you want a Pulitzer Prize?
Well, I mean, win is relative terms.
68-year-old graduate at the University of Sydney, Mr. Sebastian
Smee. In Australia,
yes,
Sydney?
Yes, born in Adelaide, according to Wikipedia.
I bet he'd really like Tim Cahill's goal in the 2014 World Cup.
That was a beauty.
Look that one up, folks.
Julius Erving going up, going under, reversing. I remember that.
That's
my
pretty
whole
beautiful.
Life. I don't remember these other goals. I'm
Jared Phelan catching that pass. Doug Flutie.
Well, you were
there.
You
were right there.
I was in the end
zone. Yes.
Take a break. I'm so angry.
Good rant.
So angry.
It's better than you, I would point out, Sebastian Smee.
Far better than I. What do we have next, Sally?
That's right.
We get back to other sports that people are snobby about. Golf.
Golf. You know,
and I get that. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
With great apologies to our friends visiting from England, I apologize for that ridiculous rant. This is the Casper Ad. You've heard me talking about Casper for some time now. That's because Casper makes expertly designed products to help you get your best rest at affordable prices. You spend a third of your life sleeping. You should be comfortable. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive foams, memory foams, not just foams, memory foams, with a quality sleep surface with just the right amounts of both sink and bounce. Their breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night. Casper isn't only a mattress company. They also offer a wide array of other products like pillows and sheets to ensure an overall better sleep experience. Not only are you getting the best sleep experience, but Casper overall purchasing experience is hassle-free. They deliver right to your door in a small, how do they do that, size box, plus free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. We did not return, nor do we intend to return, Chessie's dog bed.
No, she loves
that.
Which
we love and which Bootsy can't wait to sleep on. For listeners to this high-quality pod, Casper is offering $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/Tony and using promo code Tony at checkout. The only way to get $50 towards select mattresses is by going to casper.com/Tony, and using promo code Tony at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Raina Ems in Rochester, New York, a city I love. I've been debating for weeks whether or not to submit a song for your consideration on the podcast. I wasn't sure anything I had could be considered on the same level as the high-quality music you've been getting, but I had one song I thought had a good groove you would enjoy. The rest of my creations are far too eclectic and, frankly, more classical styling than you would probably be interested in. Been a loyal listener going back 2 decades. Harder to listen to the radio show because no station in Rochester carried it, so I had to pick it up at a Syracuse station, and work schedule regularly made me miss those days. I was happy when I heard about the podcast. It gave me the freedom to listen. I was always a fan. This is very nice. I think she records, this is called Break It Up, and I think she records under the name of Raina E.
That's right.
Raina E. She says, P.S., Liz Clark is my hero. And P.P.S., go Caps. Your show has made me a semi-Washington sports fan.
How about
lovely.
That?
Very. Thank you so much to Raina Ems. Sally Jenkins joins us now. Sally lives in the perfect spot to cover the U.S. Open at Shinnecock because she's got a house out in the Hamptons. So I would ask first. I mean, I'm gonna talk about traffic with you and all of that stuff. But have you been to Shinnecock? I'm sure a number of times. Have you ever played it? Have you ever walked it? Do you know it?
I've walked it a couple of times. I've covered 2 other opens here. I was here for Corey Pavin and Retief Goosen, so I've walked it quite a bit. I haven't played it. I can't get on.
Why?
Because I don't have your friends, Tony. I don't have your wealthy friends. I'll tell you what.
Wait, can I just suggest to you that you have a last name that means more to golf than anything I've got? Come on now, Sal.
Yeah, but I'm not a diva. I'm not a diva. I'm low maintenance. But you know what I have played? I played national, which is actually harder to get on, if anything. Yes. It's a far more quiet course, actually, behind Shinnecock. So I got a feel for what Shinnecock is probably like from playing national. National, they have a separate clubhouse for the ladies. It's a lot smaller.
I've played national. You know how I got on? I called and I said I knew Dan Jenkins. And that's how I got on. That was easy for me. How close to your house is the course? How close are you?
Oh, probably, I'm in Sag Harbor, actually, right, where Tiger Woods is staying with his yacht, with his dinghy, as he calls it, his 155-foot dinghy. So we're probably 7 miles away.
Is your house full? Do you have friends coming over? Did people say, Sally, can we come out because we'd like to see the Open?
I have nobody here, and what's more, I probably should have put the whole joint up for rent and walked away with my thousands of dollars this week, but I preferred to stay at home.
So
it's actually easy to get there from this direction. It's coming from west to east. That's the real nightmare. Coming from the city is the real nightmare.
So this is what I wanted to talk about, because last summer Michael and I went out and we were with the great Jimmy Dunn and the great Jack Vardaman, played a bunch of courses out there, had a wonderful, wonderful time. But we would notice that early in the morning as we were going west, we would notice, was it called the trade parade? Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
All
the tradesmen come in, the landscapers, the roofers, the builders, the plumbers, pretty much everybody who services or builds anything out here comes up from the west to east, because, you know, it's really just about 12 miles between Shinnecock and Montauk. I mean, you nothing comes east to west because there's nothing out there but, you know, old whaling towns. And so all the people who work here come from the west to east, and they've all funneled into a two-lane highway.
Michael, do you remember that? It's unbelievable. They're backups for miles, and I don't mean to cast aspersions on a town and reduce it to the stereotype, but if you counted 100 cars, Sally, I think you'd agree, you'd count at least 92 vans. I mean, there wouldn't be cars. That everybody's coming out to work on the properties, and you can't move. You cannot move.
Right, yeah. I mean, like I say, every plumber, every carpenter, any visitor, anyone who wants to get here, there's one road in and one road out.
Sunrise Highway.
So,
that's all you got. That's all you got. And once you get, it's a little bit further east than Southampton. When you get to East Hampton, you can sell your car. You may as well, because you're not going to move.
Yeah, that's right.
You just cannot move. It was amazing. Have you seen Tiger's yacht?
Of course. It's right there. You can't miss it.
What's it like? I mean, does he own it? Is he renting it?
He owns it. It's a $20 million, 155-foot yacht called, I believe the make is a Hull. And I have never been inside of it, of course, but it's got beautiful windows and beautiful decks, and you can read about it. I think he had it for sale for a while, so there's some information on it available online. The interesting thing is you don't see anybody on it. He's been very quiet here. You don't see him strolling around town. The irony is it's one of the few places where he could probably do that and not be bothered, because Sag Harbor's a weird little village. On the one hand, it's just this old whaling port where you have people who've lived here for generations. And then, you know, we've got literally a five and dime on Main Street that really does have things for, you know, five nickels and dimes.
Yeah.
But then there's also Billy Joel and Christy Brinkley and Matt Lauer living around here. So it's a weird sort of bifurcated town. And it's a place where people would probably leave him alone.
So where do you recommend people go for dinner? If they're going to be out there for a few days, where would they go for dinner?
The great, you know, everyone's favorite is a place called the Dockside, which is literally at the foot of the pier where Tiger Woods is staying, which is a lobster joint.
Yeah.
It's really good, solid seafood that's, again, multi-generations. Same family has owned it for a couple of generations. It's a real reliable restaurant where you can get a really good lobster, but also, you know, all kinds of other nice things. There's a great Italian restaurant called Dopo that's also right there. at the foot of the pier where he's staying.
Nobody goes all the way out, right? Nobody's going to Montauk and coming in from Montauk, right? Nobody stays out there at the Montauk Inn or something like that.
You know, I mean, Gurney's is a beautiful old hotel out there that's been refurbished. That's great. There's some great restaurants out there, too. A place called Harvest. But I think most people feel like that might be a little too far away. Tiger Woods docked out there first and then moved to Sag Harbor, I think, because they might have thought it was just a little too far.
I'm trying to get myself around this. That does Tiger Woods stand on the boat with, like, a captain's hat? You know, does he do that, like, the
now.
Captain in Tennille? Does he do something like Thurston Howell the Third? Does he do that? And did Gary just showed me that it seems that
I'm
is it called Privacy? Yeah,
it's called Privacy.
Is that his boat's name, Sal?
The yacht is called Privacy. And actually, I saw a deckhand the other day reach over and polish the letters on the side of the boat, which is pretty funny.
Is Tiger throwing out the line? I mean, is Tiger dropping anchors? Is Tiger doing anything on the boat?
You know, he's not doing a Mr. Howe thing because it's all black glass. You actually can't really see very much inside the boat. It's this big white boat with a lot of black glass. So, you know, and by the way, just a funny little note, it's moored right next to another big yacht called the Indiscretion.
Ah, okay. Well, I'm sure Tiger sees the irony in that. I'm sure he sees that.
It's as somebody pointed out, this is one of the few places. A lot of yachts moor here, actually. They come down from Maine and the rest of the eastern seaboard. It's kind of a traditional yachting stop here just because there's a deep water pier because all the old whaling ships used to be here. And so it's one of the few places, actually, where Tiger doesn't have the biggest boat.
I'm not a yacht guy myself. I was not a sailor. I don't know much about that, and I'm afraid of the water, so I'm not going to learn about it. But when you how does a boat cost that much money? That's so much money. $20 million. It's so much money.
Well, I'm told it costs about $2 million a year just to run.
Really?
Yeah, the captains make six figures. I mean, it's fully crewed, I'm sure.
He has nine crew, I believe.
But he's not sailing this anywhere.
It requires maintenance. It's not like the Little House. You don't just leave it there.
He doesn't need...
Turn off the water.
He has oodles of money.
Oodles.
That's a technical term, Sally.
A lot of technology.
You know what you don't hear? You know, you hear a lot of names of people who can win and a lot of names who people are interested in, and I'll get to some of them. But I am struck by the fact that you never hear the name Brooks Koepka. Never. And he's the defending champion. I'm not going to suggest he's unpopular, but, you know, because nobody dislikes him or anything, but you never hear his name. That must be weird if you're Brooks Koepka right now.
Yeah, except that I think everybody knows that you really don't win the U.S. Open twice in a row. I mean, Curtis Strange did it.
Yeah.
But it's awful rare just because, you know, there's so many different unpredictable factors. It's really hard to repeat. I mean, it's just damn near impossible to repeat. I think that would be the main reason you wouldn't mention him. That, and, you know, there is a little feeling that Erin Hills was an aberration, that it played like a regular PGA Tour stop rather than an actual U.S. Open. I mean, you know, when you win at 16 under par and the cut was only one over, people feel like that scoring was really out of line for a U.S. Open.
I would be thrilled if Tiger or Phil won. That probably shows my age more than anything else. But I would be absolutely thrilled, and I think that this is not the kind of course that people automatically dismiss that notion, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. These guys have a better chance here than almost any other course they could have gone to, because I'll tell you what, you have to have some know-how around here. It's like Marion. It is a course, and it's like Augusta. I think it's going to be hard for a guy who has not played a lot of golf here to win, because there's all kinds of tricks to this course. There's slopes, there's places you cannot hit it and hope to walk away with a par. There's just not a level lie on the entire golf course. The fairways look a lot more forgiving than they really are. The greens look bigger and more forgiving than they really are. If you're in the wrong spot on a green, good night, you know. So it's going to take somebody who actually, you know, has been here a bit and understands where to put the golf ball. I'd be surprised. The other thing is, all these guys, the younger guys, they look at a par five and they go, well, that's a birdie hole. And out here, they're not. They're par holes. And it's going to be really interesting to see if the young guns can swallow their pride and take a five or even a six on a par five.
Nine is the hole that I like the most. Nine is just beautiful. Comes back up and ends by the clubhouse. It's really pretty. I assume that the way the course protects itself is the wind. Is there any, and I don't want there to be wind and rain, and I'm told there won't be any rain at all, but what will the wind be like?
Well, right now it's howling at about 17 miles per hour, and it's supposed to get worse today. I mean, I was just outside, and it's actually, and it's really swirling. It's a big, nice wind, and I just checked the leaderboard, and of the first 30 guys who went off, 16 of them are already over par in the first three holes.
Wow. Davis already, he had to change some of the pin positions late yesterday because of the forecast.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. So what? Oh, by the way, what kind of car are you driving these days?
I'm driving Daddy's old Lexus.
Yeah, you were trashing Lexuses the other day in your column, and and you want to tell me about?
I didn't trash Lexus. I just said that they were lined up, you know, thicker than the shingles on the clubhouse.
Lexus is a sponsor. You made
There's
the point. What I love most of all, and I do. I've known Sally forever, and I love Sally. I love the fact that she could live out there and trash everybody else who lives out there who has money. It made me so happy. You were ripping people. It was just so nice. It made me so happy. How are you, by the way? Are you good?
I'm good. I'm tickled the tournament's here. I love this. This is great. It's a home game.
Yeah.
Home game for Sal.
It was really nice. I mean, it was so beautiful to play that last year. It was really, really nice. And the pro there, Jack Druga, was a pro at Columbia when he started out. And he was so nice to us, to Michael and to me and to Vardaman, and of course the great Jimmy Dunn, because Jimmy Dunn belongs to every club in the world. And so you are nice to him. So you're good? Do you want to pick a winner for us, just so we can make fun of you if you're wrong?
Justify.
I'm going to say, you know what?
Did you go to the Belmont? Did you go to the Belmont?
I did not go to the Belmont. I had house guests.
Oh, you should.
I had Hampton E House guests.
You should have gone to the Belmont. Did they have Lexi? Did they have multiple Lexus or Lexi?
They had Lexi. They did have Lexi. I saw American Pharoah, so I sort of felt like, you know, I've seen my triple crown. I can die now.
Because David was there. Your friend David.
Yes.
David went there. So I thought maybe you would go to say hi or something.
Well,
he's
Mr. Horseman now.
Yes, he is. He's like Baffert's best friend.
Yeah.
Oh, David and Baffert are really close. David's writing a book basically about Bob Baffert. All right, who's going to win?
You know, here's the thing. Everybody wants it to be either one of the 20-somethings or Tiger or Phil.
Yeah.
I just have a feeling it's going to be a 33-year-old Charles Schwartzel or somebody like that. A guy with a real strong putter. The putter, you know, who wins here are guys who can really, really putt. Ray Floyd, Corey Pavin, and Retief Goosen all had real strong putters. So whoever wins here is really going to have to be a good putter.
All right, enjoy yourself. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Sally Jenkins, boys and girls. Makes me very happy. We will have news when we return. Michael, I believe you have a read.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Father's Day is now just days away, so it's no longer sneaking up on you. So
it's always actually been days away, just many days.
How many?
You know, like in August, it's many days.
Also,
so here's the Sonos Father's Day read, and again, I'll be reading this as a son. Okay. For Father's Day, Sonos has partnered with Spotify to bring you and Dad closer together through music. Now through June 17th, visit fathersday.sonos.com to create a personalized playlist and card to send to your dad on Father's Day. Then you'll both get a code for 15% off Sonos. So I created this playlist. As you know, I had a cathartic experience going through my musical memories in the car with Dad and the rift in our musical taste. So I did have fun. I had to plug in one of my favorite artists, and I'm going to do this again. I'm going to put in one of my favorite country songwriters, Phil Vassar. I also have to plug in my birth year, which will be 1986. And then I'm going to put in Beach Boys for you, just because time of the year, summer.
Love
evening.
The Beach Boys. Good. Love the Beach Boys. I know they're not art like soccer.
No.
I know that,
oh,
but
no.
I love the Beach Boys.
They did not write any novellas.
No, they do
on the
not.
Pitch.
They don't go up and down the pitch.
All right, so when you create your playlist and you get your 15% off, I'd recommend you get the Sonos One. This is a small speaker that packs a big punch and is also Alexa activated and is a great way to share that playlist with the entire family.
We have Alexa.
I have Alexa.
She's listening to everything I say.
Oh, she is, yes.
And reporting on
she's,
you.
She's not subscribed to the podcast,
she's
though,
gonna,
oddly.
She's going to flip on me. She's going right to
Alexa,
sessions.
Play the Father's
Michael
Day
Cohen
playlist.
Style.
So go to fathersday.sonos.com and get a code code for 15% off at Sonos.com when you create a personalized Spotify playlist you can send to Dad. Simply select your favorite artists and the year you were born, and then do the same for Dad, and bam! Spotify will generate the perfect playlist to bridge the generation gap. We'll see. We'll report back on Monday. Go to fathersday.sonos.com and get 15% off when you create your playlist. The playlist generator expires June 17th, and terms and conditions apply.
Good job, Michael. Good job.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Stevie Owens. Steve Orlandella is the name, a longtime PTI faithful and surprisingly newly acquired little of The Tony Kornheiser Show. I write to you today equipped with the initial installment of my personal promo run attempt. Please play my music, Tony Kornheiser Show. As a 20-something year-old Air Force veteran still scanning New England for the perfect or at least good enough post-military big boy job, I've used many years of my short life making hip-hop music, and I have some type of feeling that my record Aggression off of my 7th mixtape, Dear Pride, has a chance catching some ears as I continue to work my newest project, Colors. This is very nice. First child and son arrives to planet Earth in September, so they're getting ready for that.
Lovely.
Plan to travel to the corner of Jennifer, Wisconsin, by way of Boston, to join you at Chatter for an episode within a month or so. Stevie Owens, that's what he's recording as, is Stevie Owens. Michael, if people like Stevie Owens or Raina E., from earlier, if they want to record, send their music to us, how do they do so?
Send your mixtapes into the show by emailing them to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And we are selling at the moment. We're selling the Crab Feast on Sunday. You have to call Chatter at 202-362-8040 to make a reservation for that. But are we selling anything
Don't call
else?
Open Table.
Do no, there's no, don't call Open Table. Yesterday.
And this
don't.
Is a limited
Wi-Fi.
Seating.
Yeah. Wi-Fi.
Do not call Open Table.
No. Tony will remove you himself from the patio.
Do we do anything else? Are we good?
We're good. We have the Bootsy okay. 1 code. We're good.
Colonel Derek Lipton and Major J. Philly, I hope I get that right. It's hard to read. They gave me, and I think Derek Lipton has emailed the show a number of times and is here. I have Special Forces coins.
Nice challenge.
Special Forces. Now, let's be fair. If I dropped one of these at a bar, people would look at me and go, no, you were never in Special Forces. They would have looked at you as a geek, and they never would have let you in. You're a geek.
Quite possible.
But I'm happy to have these things.
Yes, those are very cool.
Yes. Do you have news?
Yes, I do. We did not talk. I know you. Did you want some more time to talk about the World Cup?
This is terrific. This is like my ideal podcast.
What? Go ahead. I want to talk about that Spain story.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about this. Did you want to talk about the Nationals at all?
But let's talk about the Spain story.
The head coach.
Because Chris has info on this.
Yes. We'll just turn it over to Chris. The head coach of the Spain national team agreed to take a job with Real Madrid immediately after the tournament. That sat poorly with the guys who run Spain's soccer program, and they said, you know what? Why don't you just leave right now?
Now, reminder, the World Cup starts today.
Yes, this was 2 days ago.
Spain plays Portugal on Friday.
Tremendous rivalry.
They fired him yesterday.
Yeah.
So the new guy is basically going to be in the job for 36 hours. They fired him. His name is Julen Lopetegui. They fired him effectively because he had agreed to take this job, which is probably the best job in world football.
But not as important as World Cup.
No. World Cup is the most
That's
important
That's it. World
thing.
Cup is
yes,
one.
It is, absolutely. And for all these players, too.
Yes.
Lionel Messi has won a lot of things with Barcelona. He has not won a World Cup for Argentina, so people say he is not as great as, for example, Diego Maradona, who did do that. So they fire him for the announced reason of he did not act the right way. Effectively, that he was negotiating a deal while also coaching the Spanish national team. Though that has happened before. Louis van Gaal was the head coach of the Netherlands in 2014. He had agreed right before to coach Manchester United. Part of it is also that on the Spanish team, there are a lot of people who play for Real Madrid, as you would expect, and there are a lot of people who play for Barcelona. That it is not only just a big rivalry like Red Sox-Yankees, it is like Red Sox-Yankees if there was also a major geopolitical debate between the two, because Barcelona is in the Catalan region.
Which is trying to secede.
There's potential independence, and there's very much resentment between Catalonia and Madrid and back and forth. So there was some theory that this guy, that some of the Real Madrid players on the Spanish national team knew about this and were keeping it a secret and keeping it from the Barcelona guys, and that there would be favoritism. I mean, it's it's unimaginable. I mean, this, I was trying to compare it, be like firing Bill Belichick before, you know, 2 days before the Super Bowl, but it's every 4 years. It's not even every year.
I understand all of that. And I also need to point out this guy's record with the World Cup team is 14-0-6.
Yeah, they lost no games.
He's never lost.
That's right. They lost zero games.
He's never lost. You just fired. You fired a great, great coach.
Well, just that is probably true. But I would say that if I was the coach of the Spanish
national
team,
you could win them all.
No, I could not win them all. But I could probably win 3/4 of them. I mean, they are. You're dealing with outstanding ability.
We spoke to this yesterday on PTI. And neither Mike nor Mike is going to the World Cup in Russia, but Mike knows nothing about soccer now. He will by then, but he knows nothing now. And I certainly know nothing. But this is something that everybody can relate to. This is insane to get rid of your coach 2 days before you're going to play in the single most important thing and an event that only comes around every 4 years. And you're one of the favorites. Spain was considered the third favorite and now is considered the 10th or 11th because they've handed the reins over to another guy. But, and here's the big but, and here's what I want to say. This happened in the United States of America in 1989. In 1989, the University of Michigan head basketball coach, his name was Bill Frieder.
Yep.
And he announced about a week before the NCAAs that he was going to leave Michigan after the NCAAs, and he was going to take a job as the head basketball coach at Arizona State. The athletic director at that time, Bo Schembechler, stood up and said essentially this. He said, I don't want an Arizona State man coaching Michigan. I want a Michigan man. Michigan man coaching Michigan. And so he said, Steve Fisher, you're the coach.
And?
You
and
the
know
assistant.
How that ended.
Steve Fisher won 6 in a row, including the national championship, in Seattle over Seton Hall. Steve Fisher won the whole thing. I don't
Was that
I
the Ramil Robinson team?
Yeah, Ramil Robinson.
Okay,
I don't know if you can do that in soccer. I don't know. That's not my sport. But this is the one exception that you look at, and it gives you hope that maybe you can.
And they still have absolutely elite talent on the field. I mean, they're second team. There are a few World Cup teams where their bench guys are better than most of the other teams in the World Cup. France is one, Spain is one, Brazil is one.
Sure.
So the talent level,
it's there.
If you're a favorite in this tournament, as they were among the favorites.
Among the favorites.
I don't see how you can make that move if you think that coaching matters at all.
It's totally crazy move.
And plus,
crazy.
Even forget tactically and strategically, just the upheaval of it is
crazy.
Well,
you're saying, Chris, if you're saying that there is upheaval anyway, that there is
regional drama already. So, yes.
Turn your mic on.
Sorry.
Reset the board when you're on.
I was having dry throat, so I had to get a drink of water. Thank you.
Marco Rubio.
The new head coach.
Hydrate.
Yes. Fernando Hierro has said he will try and change as little as possible.
We don't care about him.
But he has said one change that he is going to instill is that
Charo will sing the anthem.
No, they're doing trivia on Tuesdays at Shatter.
Philip Grubauer will be the goalie.
That's fantastic.
So there you go. They hope that works out for him.
David De Gea, best goalie in
the world.
The
Nationals. One last night. Juan Soto goes deep twice.
Well, I guess it was a good thing we started him.
Yeah. Worked out nicely.
Soto should be playing every day. Matt Adams should be playing every day.
And Adam Eaton, three
Matt
for four.
Matt Adams, three
While
for four.
While Adam Eaton is healthy, keep him out there. Keep him out there. So,
but can I just, having watched the game, Juan Soto cannot yet field the position of left field. He gets turned around.
Or run the bases.
Or run the bases. Yeah. He got picked off. He and Trey Turner got picked off. I think three guys got picked off in 2 days.
We're a terrible baseline team. And yes, I said
they. They both got picked off. You know, that's really bad. But their bullpen, again, they went like 4 innings of 1 hit, no run relief.
I thought Madsen, that inning in the 8th, there were a couple of runners on. I thought,
it looked like a disaster.
This is where it comes apart. And he struck that
first
guy out.
First and second with one out.
Yeah.
Bryce Harper now batting .224.
Wow.
But he has fulfilled a boyhood dream. The last 2 days, he's played center field in Yankee Stadium. He's not going to the Yankees because the Yankees are flush.
Yeah.
He's not going to go to the Yankees, I don't think. But he got to play in center field.
Did you? I have followed this because I follow it really closely, like I know you do, Tone and Michael. The Michael A. Taylor keeps getting thrown out stealing bases that he has stolen. He has beaten the
and
throw.
He goes off the
base. And he either goes off the base, takes on the game I was at on Sunday, he took his foot off the base. Then yesterday,
last
he
night,
slides in. Yeah. For some reason, his left hand doesn't make – his whole body is past the tag.
They must be the worst
– what are we doing?
Taylor and Turner are fast.
Yes, they are.
They must be the worst coached base runners in history.
Oh, gosh.
It's awful.
Maybe. I think the numbers would also say they steal more bases than a lot of other teams. Turner is one of the few, you know – threats left in the league who's going to look to steal first every time and is much more aggressive with his leads.
By the way, even FP looks at it and goes, I don't know that his hand got in.
No.
Because his hand didn't
clearly
get in.
Clearly out.
Because he's out. What else do you
have? If you would like season tickets to the Washington Redskins, guess what? There is no longer a way. And I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek because for the longest time it appeared as the team was declining in their fortunes and this insistence that there were 90,000 or even as many as 200,000 people waiting for tickets seemed absurd.
What do we make of this? And let's look in the larger context, and I don't want to even narrow this down just to Washington, D.C., though in Washington, the Redskins have been a bad team for a while. But are we seeing a turn away from football? I mean, when you look at the numbers of youth football teams, when you look at it doesn't affect SEC football, but does it affect high school football around the country? Wilbon screams about this all the time, but he has a different agenda. His agenda is so the NBA will rise as the NFL falls.
Right.
But when you see what you saw in Washington, for example, with the crowds around the Capitals, which was stunning to me, and then you hear this, that the Washington Redskins, the hardest ticket for years and years and years and years, then they've already ripped up 15,000 seats from their stadium, and now they're saying, come on in. You can walk in. You can buy season tickets. Are we seeing something that, as we look back, we'll see as the beginning of the end of football?
I personally would not extrapolate anything from this and apply it league-wide. I'm sure there are markets in which the season ticket bases are growing, but I shouldn't say I'm sure. I imagine there are. As a Redskin fan, as someone who lives here, as someone who has been a season ticket holder, to me, this is just the culmination of being horrible
bad
for
teams.
20 years.
There's bad teams.
Combined with a horrible game day experience from parking to fan behavior
it's
and
awful.
Language.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just not somewhere you want to be. So, and I also think this is probably about 5 years late in being reported. I don't think there's been a waiting list for some time.
I think Gary's probably right that it is worse here than most places because Snyder is just so terrible, not just in terms of public relations alone. But I do think that football is moving, and it may never get all the way there, but moving toward a more regional sport experience.
Well, when you say football... I mean, that's a broad umbrella. You're talking NFL?
I would say
SEC football. No one's going away from that.
And no one ever will. But I do think it will not be the dominant. As the concussion data continues, and that will be an ongoing story.
Parents will.
And if there
the
is
like,
ever.
Let's
but
talk
FedEx,
about Boots.
FedEx Field was an in-between stadium. It was built before the changing attitude towards the in-game experience.
Yep.
And if you have a more modern stadium, you can have something that's geared more towards Wi-Fi, those betting experiences.
Wi-Fi.
You now have cities that are requiring that you have something that is much more accessible to public transportation. You have to walk
a
mile to get from the metro to the stadium itself.
You don't want to be there.
I'll be interested in what Gary thinks. My kids, this will surprise no one. Not that they would be good.
Right.
But my kids would never, ever play football.
They play soccer where...
They can't head until they're 12. And
Bootsy,
at that point, we have to have a conversation.
Bootsy's going to be a big boy. A big boy.
Yeah.
Two-gapper. Do you have any feeling about football?
He's not playing football. I'm so nervous that his mother's going to turn him into a rower.
Oh, can't have
that.
Don't
do that.
No.
Get
don't
the sticker for
the
car.
Let him play football.
I'm 6'4", 240. There are two of me.
We can't.
He's
going
to be like, hey, I just put my skull on my Subaru. Don't do that.
We can't have that.
The only thing
I'd rather
cool about
he plays
that,
soccer.
The only thing cool about that is being able to refer to yourself as a coxman,
well, that's
which you would be able to then do.
What else do we have?
One final. It's not Friday, but it's Thursday. We'll give you a Florida man Thursday.
Well, we're not here Friday.
Yes, that's right. Palatka, Florida. I'm not sure exactly where that is.
I know where
it's in Florida.
It's in Florida.
Douglas Peter Kelly purchased some crystal meth the other day.
DP, okay. As they call him.
Yeah, and he's DP. Smoked it and had a little bit of an adverse reaction.
Really?
Yes.
Did he take all his clothes off and jump off a building?
No, I just think it made him feel a little off. Okay. And he said, this is not my normal reaction when I smoke my crystal meth.
That's right.
And he did what, you know, this 49-year-old did what, you know, most people would do. Called up the police department and said, hey, would you mind if I bring this crystal meth by and if you could test it to make sure
it's good. It's not laced with something?
That's good, right.
So now,
and then give the rest back to me.
So now DP is in jail facing charges. So, yes, because it did test positive for methamphetamine.
I think that Palatka, Florida, I think that's in the sort of horse country around Ocala, but I could be very wrong. Could someone look that up?
Yeah, yes. How do you spell it?
P-A-L-A-T-K-A. Yeah, I could be totally wrong on
Palatka,
that.
Florida.
Is it in near
Ocala?
It's
in Putnam County. Let's see. It's, looks beautiful. It's right on the...
it's great crystal meth.
They do have nice crystal meth there.
Where
it's
is
on the
it?
St. John River.
Oh, that's down... The St. John River is the river that flows north. That's in Jacksonville.
Yeah, that's Jacksonville.
That's Jacksonville. Oh, is that where it is?
Right near Waffle House.
Scrolling outward. It is north of Orlando. Yeah, it's close to Jackson. It's yeah.
Is it anywhere near Ocala?
Ocala is not... It is northeast of Ocala.
Okay.
But not that far. I mean, you could probably get there in an hour, maybe a little less.
Okay. Oh, if you had crystal meth, you'd get there in 10 seconds.
76 and sunny there right now.
Yeah. All right, so we'll take a break. We'll come back. Old Guy Radio and Ann Hornaday will join us. And Old Guy, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Let's hope this one turns out pretty darn good, huh?
You tell lies, thing and I can see. You can't cry because you're laughing at me.
Old Guy Radio for the day is Paul McCartney singing lead on I'm Down. This was recorded 53 years ago. I want to explain how we are using this today. Because 53 years ago today, Paul said to John, what have you done today so far? And John said, well, not much, Paul. I've been laying around. I haven't done much. What have you done? He said, well, today I recorded I'm Down, I've Just Seen a Face, and Yesterday. All in the same day.
That's incredible.
Paul McCartney, all in the same day. And I love this tune, because I like when Paul McCartney does Little Richard. I like that.
That's exactly what he talked about when they did this song. He's like, yeah, I love the Little Richard songs, but I wanted to do my own Little Richard song. And that's what this
is. I'm Down, I've Just Seen a Face, and Yesterday.
So pretty good.
In the same day.
Yeah, it's a pretty productive day.
Boom! Drop the mic.
Yes. And by the way, that was take one, because you heard Paul at the start of that.
Yeah.
That's from the anthology. So that was literally the first take that they had of recording that, and feels like they nailed
it. There are good days, and there are great days. That's a great day. Ann Hornaday joins us now. She has a couple of movies. And then she doesn't have The Incredibles 2, but Nigel has The Incredibles 2, so we're happy about that. The first movie is called Tag. Like so many movies now, it says, based on a true story. I don't care if it's based on a true story. I'd rather it just be good. And this is, I guess, a bunch of guys who actually play tag and have since they're kids. Ed Helms is in it, who I like. John Hamm is in it. Jeremy Renner, who strikes me as not a guy to play comedy, but what do I know? How good or not good is this movie?
It's good. You know, I mean, it's like we were talking a couple of weeks ago. It's fine. You know, it gets the job done. It's based on this Wall Street Journal story that came out a few years ago about a group of, it's actually a huge group of guys, like 10 guys from Spokane, who've kept this tag game going. And it kind of compresses it, and it juices it up, and you know, it's basically a thinly strung together series of stunts. You know, it's like, it's all about the ambush, right? It's all about kind of finding somebody and tricking them into being tagged. And the premise is that the Jeremy Renner character has never allowed himself to be tagged. And so they get him at his wedding. So really, Renner is perfectly cast because he plays it completely straight as a kind of Jason Bourne kind of a guy. Like he's like a superhero with superhuman skills. And then Ed Helms, John Hamm, who has been really funny when he goes out to do comedy, I will note. You know, he has a really good sense of humor about himself. But the guy that steals it is Jake Johnson, and I know you probably haven't heard of him.
I don't know who that is, no.
Well, he was, Nigel, help me out, because I think he's probably better known. He's on New Girl. That was his big show.
He was in a movie called Let's Be Cops. Did you ever see that?
I haven't seen it.
He was in the Jurassic World movie.
Yeah,
exactly,
Jurassic right? He was also very scene-stealy in that, I might add. But he does a lot of indies, and he's better known for TV work. But, God, he's funny. And he plays kind of a stoner. And for my money, but it's really the chemistry of the ensemble that makes or breaks something like this, and they really have it. It's quite delightful. And then at the end, they do show the real guys, and that kind of makes it even more fun retrospectively when you see how many of those outrageous stunts were actually based in real life. So
would you say that this is sort of in the mold of Ocean's 8, that it's enjoyable, not great, but enjoyable, a little better than you think it might be?
I would put it right straight in that kind of that middle of, like, it's fine, it's not, I think that in terms of craft and technical prowess, it's a little haphazard, a little bit choppy, sometimes even a little bit sloppy. I didn't love the female characters. I thought they were either underdeveloped or not that great. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of in that hangover tradition of action comedies, and the action is good. You know, it's, and you know, the other thing is when you see it with an audience and they're with it, then it's like, well, you know, you got to hand it to it. Like, you know, it's fun. It's enjoyable.
There were some moments that I literally laughed out loud. I mean,
well, there you go.
Yeah, so it was
okay. So,
because
when I've seen the trailers, my first thought is, why isn't Adam Sandler in this movie?
It's not that dumb.
Yeah.
It's not that dumb. Yeah.
Can I ask about John Hamm?
Please. I don't know if I can answer.
John Hamm is so great in Mad Men. He's so great. I have met him. He's very, very pleasant. Can he go small screen, big screen? Can he light it? He dominated Mad Men in the best possible way.
Yeah.
Is he a big screen guy? Because I've seen a couple of movies where he isn't.
Well, did you ever go? You probably never made it to Beirut, did you?
No, didn't see Beirut.
Because that was really, that's, I think, of all the things he's done on the big screen, like, that really, I think he did very well with that. But I take your point, and we're going to talk about another movie where that same question, it's dominated by two actors who are better known for television.
Yes.
And I think, you know, I think it just depends on the material. I mean, I think he is, you know, like, he's kind of the Bradley Cooper of this ensemble in terms of, like, the handsome guy.
Yeah.
You know, the handsome guy who kind of knows he's handsome, but is willing to make fun of that fact.
The Saliza.
Yeah, the Saliza of the group, as we like to say here in the podcast. Yeah.
Hi, Ann.
Yes, right. No, but I think I was impressed with him with Beirut, you know, but I do, it does depend on the material.
Okay.
I guess I'm going to take a pass
on that. That's all right.
Yeah.
The other movie, A Kid Like Jake, is that what it's called? A Kid Like Jake, and the two television people are Claire Danes and Jim Parsons.
Yeah.
They seem to be the stars of this movie. What is this about?
This is really interesting. It's about a couple, like a, you know, sort of typical enlightened, you know, well-intentioned couple in Brooklyn who have a 4-year-old son who they're trying to get into a kinder, like, he's been in preschool, but they're ready to put him into a school, so they have to apply, you know, because I guess the public school doesn't work out in their neighborhood. So they have to go through that whole rigmarole. And so it's all about making your kid special and attractive to those recruiters and everything. And so it happens to be that Jake, at 4 years old, is more interested in wearing skirts and playing with dolls than he is with playing with fire trucks and wearing jeans. So, and they're good with it, and that's no big deal. But the point is that a friend of theirs, played by Octavia Spencer, suggests that they kind of use that as a way to distinguish him and kind of, you know, check a little diversity box. And so it's kind of an ethical quandary, you know, that they're facing about, like, really? Is that the right thing to do, especially with a little kid whose identity is in flux? And it may be, this might be his identity going forward. It may not. They just don't know, and they don't want to pin him down. And they don't want to exploit it, and they also don't want to kind of nail it when it's really something very fluid. So it's not your typical, you know, in other words, these sexual identity and gender issues aren't, quote, the problem. The problem is this ethical situation.
This sounds
that's
very
a really
interesting.
Novel. It is. I mean, it's a really novel, worthwhile lens. I mean, I think, and Claire Danes and Jim Parsons are great because their personae feed into these questions, because she's got that brittle, hard-edged, you know, sharp elbowed. She has that kind of neurotic energy that we know from Homeland. And then he's not a typical macho dude, right? I mean, he's a little gentler, a little kinder, and that comes into play in the movie. So I think that's, an example of really good casting. I mean, my critique of it is, I don't, as interesting and intriguing as that premise is, I'm not sure it's that dramatically, I don't think it sustains dramatically that well, and the little boy really disappears. I mean, it becomes so much about the parents' drama that it really isn't about a kid like Jake. It's about parents like Alex and Greg. But I do think it's worth, I thought the whole idea was, the conceit was really refreshing, and I thought quite well conceived.
Thank you, Anne. You did not see Incredibles 2, only Nigel did.
I didn't.
So Nigel will now give a review.
Yes. Well, to recap,
this is a cartoon, is it not?
Well, we call those animated features.
Animated, yes.
And to catch people up on the original Incredibles, that was about a story about four gentlemen that purchased a restaurant, and now we pick that up.
Yes, great.
As they deal with the problems of purchasing a restaurant.
It doesn't
sound like something you'd want to see, Chris.
No, I'm not interested.
No, this is Craig T. Nelson, Holly Hunter, and it basically picks up. It's very strange because the sequel is made like 14 years after the original. But it picks up basically right after the first one began, and it's a plot where superheroes are now being sort of legislated out of existence, and then there's some plot, you know, by a supervillain who's trying to eliminate them.
Thanks, Obama.
And the kids are more involved in it this time. This is not a movie for you, Mr. Tony.
Not going to see it.
For those that enjoyed the first one, I would say go see this one. It's a good family movie. It will not change your life, and it's not better than the first one by any stretch of the imagination. But as Anne said for Tag, it's fine. It's fine. It gets the job done.
Fine.
Anything else, Anne, that you'd like to talk about?
I would love to make a plug for AFI Docs. If people are in the D.C. area this weekend,
yes.
AFI Docs is underway. We saw the wonderful opening night last night at the museum with a world premiere of a movie called Personal Statement about kids getting into college. I've had a few little previews of some of the films that they're showing this year, and it's a really good lineup, really strong, lots of excellent, excellent movies. So come to AFI Docs.
And if I could implore on you, Anne, I've been telling Tony about the show Killing Eve, and I just wondered
if is it that good? Is it that good?
It's that good.
Okay.
Sandra Oh.
It's excellent.
Have you ever heard of a show, is it Mr. Mercedes or something like that? Mr. something or other. I don't.
Is it British, and does it happen in the village with thatched roofs?
I don't think so.
I think it's
Mr. something. It's being filmed by a friend of mine in Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh,
and
really?
I don't know. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the
name. Oh, find out more and let's get all up on that.
Mr. Mercedes.
There is a show called Mr. Mercedes.
Yes. Do you know anything about it? Anne, you don't. Okay.
No, I haven't heard of it. No.
All right. Thank you, Anne. Thank you.
All right, everybody,
have
a great weekend.
Okay. Anne Hornaday, boys and girls. Speaking of television, I have not done this. I'm going to just do a couple of minutes on this.
Karen just walked out here with like 20 Chatter shirts. Did you see that?
Only $12, the greatest buy in Washington, D.C.
Buy two, everyone.
The Americans has closed up shop. They had the series finale a couple of weeks ago. I waited a while to say this because other people, I'm going to spoil it.
Well, give people an opportunity to skip ahead.
Stop listening right now if you want to. I'm just going to tell you that I really liked the ending of The Americans because everyone's life is in flux. Everyone is safe. Everyone is alive. Well, not safe. Everyone is alive. And I did not think that would happen. I thought that Elizabeth had to die because in the last season alone, she killed about 35 different people. And in fact, it is one of the great scenes ever. They're in the parking garage when Stan is wise to them,
right,
and Stan confronts them. And Elizabeth says very little. This is mostly Stan and Philip. Elizabeth says very little. It's a beautiful scene. The one thing Elizabeth says, we don't kill people.
We're not those people.
We're not like that. And she has just killed like 9 people in the last hour. Anyway, they end up together without their children. They are taking their daughter, Paige, back with them to Russia in a beautifully complex escape route and way to get across the Canadian border. And then they're on a train.
And a sudden twist that you don't see coming.
Paige gets off the train. I didn't see this at all. I did not see this. I was stunned at this. They continue on. They end up in Russia. You don't know what's going to happen to them. They have pretty much ruined the plot against Gorbachev. Now, historically, you know that Gorbachev wins that. But you don't know what revenge will take place on them. You don't know if they'll ever see their children again. Stan is now taking care of the boy, Henry, but the greatest, the single greatest thing yes. in the finale, the series finale of The Americans, is Philip and Stan are talking, and Philip says, I'm getting out of here. You know, you can do what you want, you can shoot me. But right now I'm getting in the car and I'm getting out of here. And on the way out, and Stan opts for humanity, which is wonderful. In fact, they all opt for humanity in their way.
Yes.
Paige goes back, presumably, to her brother. They had decided to leave the brother behind because he was an American and it would be better for him. And everyone plays out his or her character very well. And at the end of this confrontational scene, where Philip drives away, as he's about to get into the car, he says, I don't know if I'm right about this, but your girlfriend, I think she could be one of us.
See you later.
Stan, have a good one.
Stan, right. Every time for the rest of the show, he looks at this woman, doesn't know. And that's what happened. Nobody really knows. Oleg's in prison. Really knows. There's no great resolution, but it's, to me, very satisfying. That's all I wanted to say. I love the show.
Do you think that she was a Russian, Stan's wife?
No.
You don't think she was?
I don't think so, but I don't know.
It is too bad that you've given up on Homeland, because the guy who plays Oleg...
Yeah, he's in that as well.
He's in Homeland?
Amazing in this past season of Homeland. Yeah. I love that dude.
I'm looking for a show with
Killing Eve and the last season of Homeland are both quite good.
All right, let's get out of here.
You think that Arcady was going to shoot them in the back of the head? Like, I kept thinking...
I didn't know. It could have been when he picked them up, it could have been to kill them.
Yeah.
But I didn't know, and I don't know, and it's gone now. Yes. We'll take a break. We'll come back with email and a jingle. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
We'd like to learn about your undergarments for our files. Cradle jewels and diamonds, seed pouches. It's not a secret which Kornheiser is preferred. It's notable MeUndies opted for the kid. This one's for you, Michael Kornheiser. MeUndies say this racy read for you. Ooh, you're not to blame, Michael Kornheiser, for reading words that dad finds quite risque. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey.
Steve Lipton and Sprinkle.
My father will hear me say these phrases so soft and touchable. Yeah, you must be so proud of me.
Steve Lipton in Springfield, Virginia, who writes, "Dear Ivy League son of Hoff Wop, in words of Eddie Jordan, you got to harvest your nuts right now, man." Who am I thanking here? I'm thanking Ann Hornaday. I'm thanking Sally Jenkins for coming on the show today. Today's sponsors get thanked: Casper Mattresses and Sonos, which I have in the house. It's very, very good. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave a review. From Bruce Myers in Ghent, New York, your story of the grandmother who had her grandchildren ride in dog crates while driving made me think back to several years ago. My wife and I pulled over at a rest stop on I-95 to stretch our legs, and a minivan pulled up next to us. People started getting out. Lots of people, like from a clown car. But after we thought it was empty, they opened the back hatch, and out comes Grandma. She was sitting in a plastic chair, sitting sideways, but at least she wasn't crated.
Well, yes. Mm.
From Cheeve in Somerville, Massachusetts. Is Wilbon's bid for LeBron to come to D.C. the most dubious campaign since Obenshain? I don't know. He's going to build momentum on that.
Yeah.
He's going to build momentum. He may have that. Ben Champa on Capitol Hill. You want the English soccer team to do well in the World Cup? Have you considered asking for a free flag for Chatter? Free flags at Chatter are 4-0. We should probably.
You know what? Should we affiliate? I will get a union jack.
Should
for
we
you.
Affiliate with one team? But we want to make sure
England has a chance, the Lions but they're of Senegal. They're not a front runner, so it's a good solid pick.
I will procure like a union jack.
Let's figure this out. Jim Flynn in Colebrook, Connecticut. Tony, during the Cavs celebration, there was a chance for the crowd to get unruly and accidentally burn down Chatter. The investors could have gotten out in one piece. If a Washington team wins again, keep it in mind. I know a guy. Steve Sigourney, Big Sky, Montana. Haven't heard from him in a while. You and Gene are killing me. Bonnie Raitt, the band, John Prine.
Yes.
Okay, John.
John Prine. The band did not.
I was wrong on band, but
this was yesterday's.
But didn't Bonnie Raitt sing Angel from Montgomery?
But John Prine wrote it.
He wrote it. John Prine wrote it. Thank you, Steve.
She made it famous.
Thank you, Steve. Andrew Frank, the Subaru guy from Dallas. Hello, all you happy people and Saliza. In reference to the brief discussion about bacon and Arby's from Wednesday's pod, I'm delighted to share with you the name of the voice behind that commercial. It is Ving Rhames, or more famously known as Luther Stickle from the Mission Impossible film.
Marcellus.
Marcellus from
Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, absolutely. Such a deep, soothing voice, kind of like Leon. A parting thought. Is Tom Cruise ever going to not make more of these films where he does everything but die from the danger he's in? Night and Day is a great piece. I will hang up and listen. That's very, very nice. J.C. Dringenberg, are you kidding? We get it. You played college golf. Cool. He's attacking you.
I don't even get
why
that.
Why does he even talk about what does college that mean? Golf that much?
Read the subject line. Apparently he
feels... Oh, you corrected Steve Sands on a golf course?
I don't think I had no intention to correct Steve.
I like the Michael hate because it distracts from the hate of me.
I will say this. I'm comfortable speaking for Steve. He would argue, you know, every bit as much about it as he does.
More.
We played the course last year. We just played it. Nice window into the course.
Just played it. Benjamin Brunner, WHCP radio sports reporter. When I call chatter for reservations, will I get hung up on if I say, how are you? No, you'll be fine. We get a recording that says banned for the for-profit restaurant. I'll hang up and listen. No, we don't. That's in our past.
Come to chatter and get crabs. Wait a minute, that came out wrong.
That era is gone.
Hey, Tom,
much like the choking dog era. That's gone.
You've changed.
Bill Isaacson, San Francisco this morning, Chicago tonight, back home tomorrow. Landed in Chicago today. I asked people about the water bill situation here. Here's what I learned. If you want a real water bill, you are only going to find that in Chicago. Chicago went through a drought from 1908 to 2016, so you better believe they know about water bills around here. And if you want water bill experts, you know they have to be graduates from Northwestern on the lake. Washington, D.C., on the other hand, is not a real water bill town. No way, no how. It doesn't matter how many bandwagon hockey fans to show up for a parade. D.C. is just not a water bill town. A not-so-subtle reference attacking Michael Wilbon, which makes me laugh. Anthony Perna, rather, in Chester, New Jersey. The woman to whom I'm related by marriage mentioned some Father's Day specials at a local restaurant. I said, chatter has all-you-can-eat crabs. Without hesitation, she said, yeah, but I don't love crabs all that much. She noticed a surprised look on my face and added, Kornheiser's restaurant, right? Affirmation, baby. Michael Guardiola, Seattle, Washington. Anita Pallenberg was just one Rolling Stone away from hitting for the psycho. That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. If you're out on your bike side, everyone, as always, do wear white. Can you imagine that hitting for the cycle with a Rolling Stone? Go ahead, hit it.
We're not gonna be sucked this year.
Tell him, Ovi.
Every day.
We're the Stanley Cup champion.
Thanks,
the best.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
The best.
Hey, sometimes I just can only take so much. There's moments in life where I just ain't so clutch. And see, when I get lost, I'm hard to find. Even my closest folks be like he lost his mind. But never you though, girl. You want me to vent, you let me get it all out while you take all of it in. And I owe you a lot, girl, I trust we met. Cause you know I can't love when I don't love me yet. Not fully at least. And it's not you to nag, to worry where I've been at, or what I got in my bag, or what the hell we are. Girl, I'm learning from you. And one day I'ma really learn to keep it working for two. Cause I feel so much better as soon as I'm done talking. You kinda give me that look, and that's what I start wanting, what I know you want too. I'm like, what you gonna do? You wanna say something to me when I'm through? I'm through. What you got? Okay, I'm good, baby, what you want me to do?
Take your aggression
oh, yeah. Okay, that sound nice, but tonight I said a lot. Someone who I can call a friend and really trust. That's that, bring it back. I'm all yours, I'm yours, what is it that you're trying to say? The lights off on my watch, I'm taking you down. A lady who don't ever need to compete, yeah. You're just, that's that, hey. When I'm beat down, when I need help, when I think my mistakes define me well, you just have some slick way of calming my nerves, yeah. And making me really cherish all that I'm worth. Girl, how do you do it? You do not judge, you never worry about the past and the dude I was before you knew my love or even knew me at all. Like you need not know things, for you were involved, and the future is ours. But I'm presently stuck in a delusional world, like yo, it's legend of busting. It's never enough for me to truly be proud, and I think it's just, I'm losing it, wow, girl. But you just smiling, you love when I ramble and how I ask for nothing. Although I come with a handful, I know that I do. But that fire's been lit, so when I do shut up, you right there biting your lip. It's like you saying, babe. Okay, I'm good, baby, what you want me to do?
Take your aggression out of me.
Okay, that sound nice, but tonight I said a lot.
You know I'm always down to pay.
Someone who I can call a friend and really trust. That's that, bring it back. I'm all yours, I'm yours, what is it that you're trying to say?
Take your aggression out of me.
And lights off on my watch, I'm taking you down.
You know I'm always down to pay.
A lady who don't ever need to compete, yeah. You're just, that's that, hey. It's gotta be you, like 100%. Cause we make love, but we a couple of friends. It's not too often, we don't fit like strength. Cause this ain't some quick fling we think might end. And though maybe the time's wrong, the feelings are real. Think we both should admit that, I will if you will. Cause you stand by me, even through my falls. So let me find myself, and I'll give you my all. You can hold me to my word, I ain't lying, baby. This ain't easy, but I'm certainly trying. I'm certainly trying, baby. Not that fame and fortune is what you want, but I sure would give you everything you ever needed and desired. Whatever, whenever, treat you like a queen. Oh, forever, forever, is that too much? I hope not. I'm praying I look up at you and your eyes are saying, baby. Okay, I'm good, baby, what you want me to do?
Take your aggression out of me.
Okay, that sound nice, but tonight I said a lot.
You know I'm always down to pay.
Someone who I can call a friend and really trust. That's that, bring it back. I'm all yours, I'm yours, what is it that you're trying to say?
Take your aggression out of me.
Lights off on my watch, I'm taking you down.
You know I'm always down to pay.
A lady who don't ever need to compete, you're just, that's that, hey.